This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 360 days a year. To keep a certain flutter statism out of your head, can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it? 365 days a year, my bad. 365 and a quarter. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Worms.
So, this is Lou, and I'm joined by Shane and Knight. What's going on, boys? Shane, what's new in your world?
I've been having a little bit of health issues, which is, I guess, common when it comes to this kind of this line of work.
Well, this is a teaching hospice, and filling in for Michael W. Dean tonight is Shane Buell. Take it away, Shane.
Well, I've been trying to get off of aspirin and ibuprofen, and ibuprofen was tearing up my stomach and actually gave me ulcers. So I recommend people to take it easy on the ibuprofen out there. But so anyway, I've gone off of ibuprofen. I'm just taking aspirin, but I still have that weak stomach at this point, where even too much coffee can give me a bad stomach again. So yeah,
You can get a stomach transplant.
A stomach transplant, dude. That sounds like a great idea. I'm gonna have to look into that. Hashtag please donate.
So what, if you don't mind going into it, what brought this about?
Well, a couple of years ago I was in a car accident and I broke my leg in five places, and I had a couple surgeries to put some titanium and steel in there to put it back together, and there's a little bit of discomfort involved with that, so I've been taking aspirin and ibuprofen for a while, but the amount of ibuprofen that I took was too much for my stomach. And so I started having ulcers at some point, and then I had to really be careful with what I eat and what I take along, like with my aspirin and so forth. So yeah, it's been acting up again, and I think it's just too much coffee, I think, at this point is what's going on.
Yeah, I try to juggle my over-the-counter pain medications around a little bit so that they attack all the different organs equally instead of just focusing on one organ.
I'm going to have to adopt a similar technique, I think.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, and when you start to get old, which one of the prerequisites for being a freedom fiend is you have to be old or you have to be underage. So you have to be, you know, that's how you become an apprentice. So like Knight, he's a youngster. You're what, 16?
Yes.
Alrighty. So anyway, when you're taking the pain medication, I think with ibuprofen is generally a pretty good idea. This is what I was told by one of my coworkers. And I work in a hospital, so, and it wasn't the janitor, but she had said that to stay probably under, I think it was under 2,400 milligrams, or was it 3,200, something like that. But anyway, what I generally do is, for the Motrin, I'll take 600 milligrams at a time, at the most. I try to keep it to just one tablet or two, if, you know, at the most, but sometimes I need to do three. Interestingly enough, you can go to Walmart or any store and buy the 200 milligram tablets, and that's just fine. But you have to have a prescription to get the 600 milligram tablets, because that's where prescription strength starts. So I hope nobody out there has thought about taking three of the 200 milligram tablets and getting prescription strength by purchasing over the counter.
Worms.
So, wow, what a crowd here. Oh my god. So,
but the fiends, they tend to trade their Flintstone vitamins in for Centrum Silver pretty quick, as is the case with Nick Hazelton.
This is a teaching hospice.
Yeah. So. Nick went from Flintstone vitamins to Centrum Silver pretty quick, and he doesn't stay up past 9 o'clock anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, straight out of rehab, Nick. Yeah. So what's going on with you, Knight? Let's hear about your job search.
I got pretty lazy, y'all. I did take note of what I said or what you said last time I was on the show, but
and I forgot all about it.
Yeah, I forgot all about my job search because it's summer. You know, I'm just chilling. I'm sleeping in and staying up. Yeah, that's the life. So I guess subconsciously I'm not really ready to give that up.
So is this like a morning show for you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, any other exciting stuff going on with you guys? Knight, you're basically a homeless derelict right now. So you really are Nick Jr. But anyway. Anything?
So anyway.
Anything?
I rolled my ankle, y'all. That's exciting, right?
Well, how did you do that?
I was playing basketball, and the second jump shot that I took, I landed on my ankle, pretty much. And didn't feel good.
Yeah, I've actually rolled my ankle many times in the past. I used to be a skateboarder. And I also played basketball as well. So sprained ankles are nothing new to me.
So I have an interesting subject that just popped in my head. And this is from a conversation that I saw on FaceBeast earlier today. And I'm going to try and find it real quick. But the subject was, what do you do in the event of like power outage and... you know, just basically not full-blown disaster, but definitely like power failure, storm, stuff like that. We're not talking earthquake or the New World Order zombie apocalypse where the lizard people come in and tear stuff apart. But let me see here.
We're just talking like a China-level EMP or something?
Nah, maybe North Korea.
Oh, okay. So nothing major.
So I can't find the actual post here, but the question is, what do you do in the event of a power outage, a long-term power outage that lasts a couple of days?
Okay.
What's your plan? Because what this person talked about was how she has her little camp stove and everything else, and in the event of a situation like this, and she recounted a story of losing power for a few days in a really bad storm, and... how she had made coffee in her camping percolator and took it around to her neighbors to spread some good cheer. So the question is, what do you guys do in the event of a power outage? A storm comes in, you're going to be out of power with like 3, 4, 5 days, something like that.
That's a really good question. I guess everyone should have some sort of plan, whether it's just a few days or some sort of apocalyptic zombie apocalypse type situation. But a bug out bag wouldn't be a bad idea with like certain necessities in it. But then, you know, you also want to have a plan to, I guess, be sustainable. But this is only you're talking a few days, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess
let's turn this into news we can use.
Okay. How do we do that?
As a matter of fact, I have the subject here. Here's the post. She says that she grew up on a farm and grew up using the outhouse and everything else. Her parents and grandparents had that also. So one time, 2003, the power went out, and she lived in a townhouse at the time. 90-mile-an-hour straight-line winds took out the power lines, blah, blah, blah. Some areas were out of power for as long as 2 to 3 weeks. Some houses got smashed. Roads were blocked. Stuff was all messed up. So anyway, next morning, she brewed coffee on her grill and went door to door with a huge camper percolator and gave out cups of coffee to all the neighbors. People were very gracious. Their expressions humorous and grateful for the most part at my offer. I figured out the toilet and sanitary issue where I live now if the power went out and if the lift stations went down. Next, I need to figure out the solar situation. Even having just the capability to run my laptop for a few hours every day would probably be a big deal if I didn't have the power for a few weeks, and especially months. There's a big difference between a couple days without power and weeks without power. The flood of 97 and evacuation taught me how bad it can get with weeks and months being homeless and going without power. And with practice, it would be far less traumatic of a transition if something like that happened. So the question is, what would you guys do? Now, Shane, I know that you've got some camping gear. So off the top of your head, what's your reaction?
Well, I guess if it's only a couple of days, then I would go camping. Maybe go camping at home and make the best of it. We actually do have one of those little camping stoves, and we can cook hot dogs and roast marshmallows and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it would be a nice, fun weekend.
Okay, so what's your plan for keeping your food cold, though, stuff that needs to stay cold?
Oh, well, that's actually a good question. We have a pretty good cooler, but you'd have to start with ice. And if it's something that you didn't plan, like a just random power outage, then I guess you're not going to be able to have that ready to go. So does the article actually mention something like that?
It's not an article. It's just a Facebook post.
Oh, it's a Facebook post. Well, did they have any ideas for that?
Well, I don't want... Well, actually, she listed some other stuff in the comments, but I want to get your guys' opinions.
Well... Yeah, I actually don't have any good plan for on-the-spot food storage like that unless you're actually going to be able to go and get frozen ice and put it in the cooler. But even some of the best coolers are only good for a couple few days that way at the most.
As opposed to melted ice.
Right, yeah.
So here's what I'm thinking. I have a little... chest freezer. It's not really big. I think it's like 5.7 cubic feet, something like that. So not too big, but it does a trick. Nice thing about that, and as well as a regular freezer, it will generally keep stuff cold for at least a few days. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit more when we get back.
Listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Shane and Knight. So the discussion is, what do you do in a power outage if you're going to be out of power for, let's say, a week? Because 2 or 3 days is just camping. So what do you do if you go out of power? And we're talking about keeping food cold. Now, when we went to break, I was talking about the little coffin freezer that I have, and I use that for keeping meat in there. And I did keep bags of ice in there for a little while, but it takes up a lot of space. And then generally the freezer in your kitchen will probably keep your food cold for probably a good 3 days. You know, by that time it's going to start to melt, and you're probably going to be looking at, oh God, what do we do? So I came across something really interesting last time I was downstate. I was down in the Detroit area, a couple weeks after Liberty Fest for a family get-together. And when I'm down there, I always like to stop at Trader Joe's and the other stores that I don't have anywhere near me. So, like, the nearest Trader Joe's is probably about 3.5 hours away in Wisconsin. So, anyway, I bought a bunch of steaks down there, and then bacon, because, you know, gotta have bacon. And rather than buying bags of ice, I bought the little spring water bottles. You know, like 16.9 fluid ounces, something like that. And at Trader Joe's, they sell those for like, I don't know, 17, 18 cents a piece. So I get these little spring water bottles, and they're frozen solid, and I'm using that as my ice. And I throw that in the cooler, and I get home, and sure enough, there's maybe a couple drops of water in there. It held that long, and it kept everything nice and cold. So that is probably a little bit better suggestion than having bags of ice. So you could go get like the 28 pack of spring water for about, I don't know, $3-4. So you throw a bunch of those in the freezer, and when you need them, you know, and even if you're just going on a picnic for the day, go ahead and take them. But you have those for in case of emergency situation. Anybody there?
Yeah. I really like that.
We lost Shane.
I guess so. But I really like that idea of the frozen spring water. I never even thought about that. That's actually very innovative on your part, Lou.
Well, I didn't think of it either. People at Trader Joe's did. But I think our people thought of it first, so I don't know. I don't know where it came from, but it came. But, yeah, I was really surprised at how well it worked. And as a matter of fact, I will occasionally put one of those bottles of water in the freezer to cool it down for, like, if I'm doing yard work, I want to come in. Because I wasn't thinking, I didn't put it in the fridge like that morning or the day before or whatever. And I know I'm going to need some spring water, so I just throw it in the freezer and hope that it's nice and cold by the time I get done. Because I'm going to be about an hour and a half cutting grass, something like that. So go in there and do that. And there's been many times that I've forgotten about it and left it in there for several hours. So I pull it out and I put it in the fridge and I'm waiting for it to melt. And I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm waiting. It takes a few days for it to melt in the fridge.
Really?
Yeah. And you'll still have ice in there for quite some time. So it's not unreasonable that if you have a cooler and you have that cooler out of the sun, and if you have it in like a nice shaded area where it's, no pun intended, going to be a little bit cooler than directly out in the middle of the sunlight, you might get 4 or 5 days out of it.
I mean, at my house, we don't really have that many, you know, foods that need to be refrigerated, you know, meats, all that stuff. My stepdad, he likes to hoard a bunch of canned food that we're never going to eat. But I guarantee that if we get like a major power outage, then he's going to say, I told you so. Because there's so much in there that it could last like a month. And luckily for me, I don't mind canned food.
Only a month? So,
yeah, I mean, it fills up our pantry. And the other stuff in there is just like Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue sauce that he got on sale.
Yeah, So that's a smart thing, having the canned goods. We'll be right back after this trip to market. And Shane got drones, so maybe he'll be resurrected.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
So, something else that I was thinking about, and Shane, you've seen my camper.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, one of the nice things about that camper, and I found out after I moved into my current location that this area has a tendency to lose power a little bit more than the neighboring communities. That's probably something I would have liked to have known beforehand. But anyway, so one of the things I do is I have my camper set up right out in the back of the house, and it's always plugged in. That way, if the power goes out, that means that power will stop going to the camper, of course. I have a propane-powered refrigerator in there and freezer. So when that happens, it automatically kicks on. So it's like if I'm out, if I'm getting ready to go on a trip, I have it set up to run on both gas and electricity. So as soon as I disconnect the power cord from the house to the camper, that's when the propane portion of it kicks on. And I probably, with my two batteries that I have on there, and I could probably add more if I wanted to, but with the two batteries that I have probably close to a week of electricity in there.
Wow, and that's pretty sweet, Lou.
Yeah, that's using it kind of frugally. So not leaving the lights on all night and things like that. But the water pump only uses power when it's running. The lights are LED, so they use very little light on their own. If I'm cooking inside, I might have some lights over the sink going, and then also the exhaust fan. But ultimately, it's not using a heck of a lot of electricity on its own. Now, granted, I can't use a microwave. I definitely can't use the air conditioner. But one of the other things I have is I have this thing. It's a power converter, I think it is. Converter or inverter. I think a converter. So anyway, I can plug it into it. I can plug it into the cigarette lighter attachment inside the camper, and that will give me like 410 watts of electricity for running my fan. Yeah, for running my fans and powering up the laptop. I can even run a TV off of it.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's a converter from, I think, DC to AC.
Yeah. So that right there, that's an option. Now, I know that not everybody's going to go out and get a camper, but if you did have one, that's one of the things that you could do with it.
Worms.
Yeah. And since I have a well and septic here, if I lose power and I don't currently have a generator, I'm not going to have water flow here. So the other nice thing about having the camper is I have the facilities.
That's always a good thing.
So as far as your camping gear, Shane, what do you have and what would you use for getting through a week?
Well, let's see here. Assuming that, you know, you don't really have to use the tent and you could just, you know, still use the structure that you're living in, then I would probably fire up this little camping stove. It's kind of like a tiny grill that, you know, it's got these little legs that you set up and put a little charcoal in it, and you can grill up, you know, just about anything on there. But we like to do sausages and brats and hot dogs and stuff like that. But so you're talking about going for a whole week, though, because at some point you're going to have to do, I guess, like, you know, laundry and, you know, bathing and things like that. So it's going to get complicated after a few days.
Laundry's not that difficult to do.
Yeah.
Now you get yourself a 5-gallon bucket and a lid. So go to Walmart or Home Depot, go to the painting section, buy the big bucket, buy the lid that goes with it. You can cut out a portion in the center of the lid using they get these drill bits that also have saws on them. It'll spin around in a circle and get it. Cut it so that the diameter is just a little bit larger than the diameter of a stick on a plunger, and put that plunger in there, put the lid on top of it, and that's your agitator for washing clothes.
Oh, okay. Huh. A do-it-yourself homemade washing machine.
Yeah. Yeah. Or as they call it down in Tennessee, the modern stuff.
Yeah. Could you also churn butter with that thing?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it's heavy enough.
Yeah, true.
So anyway, I thought that this was a rather interesting subject when I saw the post earlier today. Knight, do you have anything that you want to contribute?
No, I don't think I have anything interesting to add.
Okay, well, thank you for your input then. So, all right, let's move along here. A story that we covered a few weeks ago was the Baltimore cop who videotaped himself recording evidence or planting evidence on people. Mm-hmm. So he was framing people. He was falsifying evidence so that people could be arrested and locked in a cage and innocent of the crimes that they're accused of in that particular case. And unfortunately, for a lot of the bootlicker Americanists, they see that, well, they got framed for this, but they must have got away with something else, so this makes up for it. And it's really horrible because, well, one, it's the war on drugs, a.k.a. no cartel or police agency left behind, and it's a horrible thing to lock people in a cage for anyway. But there's been an interesting development. As 34 innocent people set free, second video of Baltimore cops planting evidence discovered. So, from Baltimore, Maryland. After their department gained national shame last week over a video showing an officer plant drugs to frame an innocent man while his fellow cops watched, the Baltimore Police Department is now under fire again. This time, the Baltimore Public Defender's Office has a second video that allegedly appears to depict multiple officers working together to manufacture evidence. Last week, it was announced that nearly three dozen people will have their charges dropped after the video of Officer Richard Pinero showed him planting drugs while officers Hovannis, wow, really long Baltimore name, and Jamal Brunson stood by and did nothing. Following the public release of the video, 34 cases were immediately dismissed that relied on testimony of Pinero, Baltimore name, and Brunson. Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn J. Mosby noted that just 12 of the cases have enough evidence to continue moving forward, while an additional 77 are under review.
Wow.
Wow. How much manpower is flushed down the toilet because these dirty cops were manufacturing evidence.
And right.
How much time and effort has been put into making these cases only to have them fall apart by having to admit that they're a scam? Not just a scam in the fact that it exists, but they have to go dirty to do this.
Right. So, like, 34 cases have already been dismissed, and another 77 are under review, which totals over 100. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's 111 something. Knight, do some math.
It was 111.
111. Yeah, so that's an awful lot of cases. And that's just 111 that they're admitting to. There's probably a lot more out there that fall in the same category. Wow.
Yeah.
This war on drugs is really a sham.
Yeah.
So anyway, Pinero has since been suspended, while the other two have only been placed on administrative duty. So they're getting like whatever you get when you get like a twisted ankle or something like that, alternate work. So they're riding a mask. The new video involves different officers, the public defender's office said. The officers were not named. Melissa Rothstein, a spokeswoman for the public defender's office, said the latest video shows a co-defendant of her office's client. That person is not presented by the public. Is not represented by the public defender's office. Therefore, the office is not releasing the footage. She said, the public defender's office said the related case that was dropped Monday involved seven officers. Seven of them. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Though Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn J. Mosby's office has only referred to two officers to the police department's internal affairs division. Melba Saunders, a spokeswoman for Mosby, confirmed prosecutors had referred two officers to internal affairs, saying they had questions about the video. But she also urged caution in assessing. Orwell would be proud. Or maybe he wouldn't. Because I think 1984 was meant to be in a warning, not an instruction manual. But she also urged caution in assessing the officer's actions as deceptive and or a credibility issue before a thorough review is conducted. Well, let's see. If you have,
I think there could be a credibility issue there.
Yeah. If you have video of officers planting evidence, if you have video of them just doing horrible, nefarious things that are obviously illegal, I don't know. How can you not consider that to be deceptive or a credibility issue? And how much review do you need to do to confirm that it's deception?
That's Anyone? A good question, Lou.
Anybody got answers?
Well, I would say that it's kind of obvious here because we have the video. I mean, they were caught red-handed once, and if that wasn't enough, they've got another video now that I don't think we've seen yet where they've been caught red-handed again. So I don't think there really needs to be a lot more investigation that needs to be done here. This kind of should be an open-shut case, in my opinion.
Yeah, it should be, but of course they're going to have to go through the all the rigmarole in the denial and dancing because they have a tendency to protect their own. They're not very cannibalistic. And it's really funny that the job of the cops is to persuade witnesses to come forward and testify against people, yet they are so loathsome to do that on their own.
Worms.
Hey, you know how you get a cop to stop chasing you? Put a thin blue line on the ground. He ain't crossing that thing. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you tired of driving your kids to G.G. Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where G.G. took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the G.G.est place on Earth. G.G. always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to G.G.'s grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone, and that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll Mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire, and our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find G.G. Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, Meow Bit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find G.G. Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating G.G. Allen's face.
Talking about the police officer in Baltimore who got busted planting evidence on his own body cam, and it turns out that another cop has been busted doing this. So I just was 111 cases we figured have been kicked or are about to be kicked in total. So, going back to this story from the Free Thought Project by Matt Agarist, the new video involves different officers, public... I already read that. All right, pending the Baltimore City Police Department's investigation pertaining to the officer's conduct, the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office is requesting postponements on all cases involving the officers, Saunders said. We look forward to continuing the advancement and pursuit of justice for all.
Okay. Well, they should postpone those cases.
They should lock themselves up and do their own Nuremberg trials because they're drug warriors. However, even after prosecutors watched Pinheiro plant the evidence in the video, they still had him testify in another case just days later.
What?
So the idea... Yeah, yeah. So the idea that they are working toward the advancement and pursuit of justice for all is laughable. I'm not laughing. And I'm sure there's probably quite a few people that are crying over it. They had knowledge. They watched it and were appalled by what was on the video. And then for whatever reason, made the choice to continue to call him as a witness, said public defender Debbie Katz-Levi. Exactly why he wasn't immediately arrested and thrown in jail after being seen on his own body camera planting drugs to frame an innocent man remains a mystery. And now the Baltimore Police Department is being tight-lipped on this new video once again. Because the job of the cops is not to bring justice. The job of the cops is to enforce the law. And to do it by any means necessary. And as a matter of fact, it has been determined that cops can use deception during interrogation. So they can lie to a suspect. They can lie to a suspect and deceive them to trick them into confessing. So if they use deception in a interview or interrogation, doesn't it make sense that they might believe that they can use deception when going before the jury, you know, by planting evidence? No? Hey, right. trick the jury into convicting innocent people, you know, like they trick people, in, like they trick suspects into confessing. Yeah, and strangely enough, I know in federal cases it's illegal to lie to law enforcement.
Oh yeah, it's illegal to lie to them, but it's just standard procedure to lie to us.
Yes. Yes. So what does this really say for those of you out there that are still with the blue line, got to support my boys in blue? They're not the good guys. And I have a story coming up later that's really going to knock your socks off. I was really shocked when I saw the headline. But anyway, so yeah, another bunch of cops getting busted.
Yeah, so these guys are getting caught being dishonest. And they're postponing the cases that they're on, supposedly. But then this one guy gets called in to testify on another case just a few days later. So,
yeah, after they caught him being dirty, they said, oh, gee, this guy's dirty. Man, let's have him testify anyway. It's just somebody's life. Who knows? He might not have done it this time, but he probably did something else that deserves it. You know?
Yeah, that makes me wonder how far up the corruption goes in that department.
It's not corruption. It's standard operating procedure. But for those out there who use that ends justify the means mentality, that say, well, you know, he's getting what he had coming to him for something else, obviously. What if that was your kid? Because here's the thing, something I've noticed about the biggest drug warriors, I'm not talking about the drug warriors with badges, I'm talking about the drug warriors that are just, they support the war on drugs. They would never call the cops on their own 15-year-old for smoking weed. But they would call the cops and testify and demand that somebody else's 15-year-old go to jail, get arrested, have a record, and go through the system.
Yeah, all for policy enforcement and revenue generation.
Yeah, sometimes karma's a biatch, especially when it happens to your kid. We'll be back in the second hour.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Meow, meow.
the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Feast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCON no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCON.org. And interestingly enough, the early Freedom Fiends episodes, the signals have finally reached Alpha Centauri like a week or so ago.
That's right.
And we are anxiously awaiting the response of our alien overlords.
Yep. That happened actually a day last week that me and Jeremy were on together, and Michael sent me an email and said, we have to talk about this.
Yeah, he sent me that email too. I was pretty excited about that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Especially since they have actually found a planet that could potentially support life in the habitable zone around Proxima Centauri, which is one of the stars in the Alpha Centauri system. So there could actually be someone there to listen to the show.
You said stuff that I don't understand, but cool. I don't know all the astronomy stuff. So anyway.
Okay.
So where do we want to start with this one here? We want to talk about Colorado.
Colorado.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you already started talking about Colorado.
Yeah. Let's talk about Colorado. Okay. So, democracy has succeeded, the people have spoken, and freedom has been delivered to the good people of Colorado because they now have permission to use cannabis, so long as they follow all the rules, regulations, restrictions, and everything else. Colorado illegal pot growers sentenced to 10 years in prison. Incidentally, the raids are still going on in Colorado. As a matter of fact, I believe it was the Denver City Police Department partnered up with the feds to go out on raids. And supposedly they weren't going to be doing that. But anyway, they partnered up with the feds and I think the state police to go out on raids of illegal grow operations.
That's true. God.
Yeah. It's just absolutely horrible. Government declares war on a plant and the plant's winning. Congratulations, government, you're getting beat by stems and seeds. So anyway, yeah, the illegal pot grower gets 10 years in prison from Pueblo County, Colorado. The last person of seven people caught in the raid of an illegal marijuana growing operation in Colorado has been sentenced to 10 years in prison. I wonder if the Baltimore police helped in that investigation. The Pueblo chieftain reports Richard Samples was sentenced on Tuesday after he and six others were caught in March 2016. The Pueblo County Sheriff's Office and other authorities raided five homes and seized 1,900 marijuana plants with a street value of approximately $7.5 million. And the only reason that 1,900 plants are worth that kind of money is because prohibition. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
So
plus they count the dirt and probably the pots too that they're growing in and all that sort of stuff. So
I wonder if they inflate the value of the pots the way the value of the other pots is inflated.
I'm sure they do. It's probably a similar amount.
So anyway, back to the story. Yeah, Samples received a longer sentence than most of the other defendants because he has a history of committing crimes. Let's see now. Oh, it doesn't
probably
say
victimless crimes.
Yeah, which means not crimes. Right. The other six include Daniel Bingham will serve 14 months, Nathaniel Clausen will serve 15 months, Derek Brickbill will serve 12 months, Gary Bruce will serve 23 months, Angel Rodriguez will serve 14 months, and Dennis Rodriguez will serve 2.5 years. The defendants pleaded guilty to conspiring to manufacture marijuana. What, they got a factory where they're assembling marijuana plants?
I know, they make it sound like it's meth or something.
You don't even really assemble meth either. But anyway, well, manufacturing, I guess you could say that, yeah. So anyway, for conspiring to manufacture and possess it with the intent to of distributing it. So they have the intent of engaging in capitalism. And that's obviously something that needs to be stomped out. Can't have that running around. So
these are people who were imprisoned for illegally growing in Colorado, a state that's supposedly legalized.
Yeah. So long as you have all your licenses, permits, and all that other stuff that you need to show that you're free.
Mm-hmm.
And just so long as you follow all the rules. See, everybody had this idea that it was going to be this bastion of freedom and liberty. No, it's not. Because the cops have gone from enforcing prohibition to enforcing regulation. So, do you want to know what legalized it, tax it, regulate it looks like? It looks like this. It looks like SWAT raids. It looks like people getting thrown in a cage because they have to follow this big, giant, monster set of rules that, if it doesn't already rival the IRS procedures for filling out your taxes, it will eventually. Because that's what's going to happen. So, and ultimately, everything in this world, every activity is going to turn into an IRS form. That's how bad it's going to be. And that's how arbitrary it's going to be. It's how difficult it's going to be. It's how subjective and, how subject to the interpretation of the interpreters it's going to be. That's how everything's going to wind up. So what do you guys have to add to this story?
Well, it just so happens that in Colorado, I could still have a hard time wrapping my head around this, how it could be legal, but these people are still getting in trouble for this stuff. And I think we did a story on, I think, Nevada or some other state in the West out there that has medical or legal marijuana, but they didn't plan for enough supply to meet the demand. So they actually had to meet the demand with black market supplies. And
I was on that show. We were talking about it.
Yeah. So, it just goes to show how, like, if there had been, let's say, a shortage in Colorado and a state of emergency, this guy who got busted for being a black market manufacturer may have actually been utilized by the state services to provide in a state of emergency. So it all goes to show that it's completely arbitrary, this whole equal justice under the law thing. It just depends, you know, how it can serve government.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I think the Nevada story would be like a comparison to the NRA, the National Recovery Act, back during the Great Depression time. And even more, there's a video out there, and you can see this on YouTube. It's called Hemp for Victory. And hemp was made illegal back in the 1930s, and the argument was about cannabis, so, you know, the devil's lettuce and everything else, and everybody was going to do all these horrible things and stuff like that because of the devil's lettuce. And hemp was used for rope and many other things, and one of the advantages to hemp is that it grows very quickly. In comparison to trees, I believe it grows about a quarter of the time. So you'll have mature hemp plants that you can use in a fraction of the time that it would take to grow trees for paper.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there was a time in there where they lifted the prohibition on hemp, you know, the devil's other lettuce, so that they could use it to make ropes for the war effort.
Oh, yeah.
And then after the war was over, it became illegal again. So it was so bad that it had to be outlawed, and it was so bad that it had to be outlawed again. But it wasn't so bad that they couldn't use it for war, because there's always an exception for war. There's always an exception to commit acts of violence and mass murder because government. But for the common man to grow hemp to make rope, to use on his farm, or to sell to his neighbors, nope, you're going to the cage. That's how arbitrary it is. Knight, you got anything to say?
What it looks like, and paying attention to what you guys have been saying, it just seems that they view all of this as you're expendable until they need you. Like the Nevada case where they had to go to the black market to meet the demand. and needed this guy. Wouldn't it be 10 years?
All right, you're buffering.
Probably be shaking hands.
All right, say that again. You buffered pretty hard. Knight?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're buffering real hard.
Fiend phone.
And
Fiend phone.
And it looks like we lost Shane. So, all right, Shane's back again. So, all right, try it again, Knight. Knight, are you there? Okay, looks like we lost Knight. And Shane, are you back?
I'm back now.
Okay. All right, so what were you saying? Because you were buffering pretty hard. You said that people are expendable.
Basically, the law views you as expendable until they need you. And, you know, paying attention to you and Shane talking about it, you know, using the Nevada case as an example where they had to go to the black market to meet the demand. Like Shane said, if there was a shortage, he wouldn't be locked up facing 10 years. In fact, he'd probably be shaking hands with the same police officers that locked him up.
Good point. Good point. Yeah, it's really crazy because, one, they're outlawing plants. They're outlawing agriculture. It's just absolute lunacy. But the things that are going on with this, one of our other stories here, and we'll get to it when we come back, is a Kansas home where they raise tomatoes got SWAT raided. We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
So we're going to take a break from Colorado and go over to Kansas for a minute here. This comes to us from the Chicago Tribune. Will never be the same. A hydroponic tomato garden led police to raid Kansas family's home. The police report would claim it all kicked off at 7:38 a.m., but Bob Hart later thought it had to be earlier. His 7:20 a.m. alarm had just yanked him awake. Got to get the kids, a boy in 7th grade, a girl in kindergarten, ready for school. Then he heard, like a starter's pistol, setting everything into motion, the first pounding on the front door of his home in Leawood, Kansas, a bedroom suburb south of Kansas City. It was thunderous. It didn't stop. Should I get up, Bob thought? Should I not? Sounded like the house was coming down, he would recall later. Wearing only gym shorts, a stocky 51-year-old left his wife in bed and shuffled downstairs. The solid front door had a small window carved at eye level, 1 foot square. As he approached, Hart saw the porch was clogged with police officers. Immediately after opening the door, 7 members of the Johnson County Sheriff's Office pressed into the house, brandishing guns and a battering ram. Bob found himself flat on the floor, hands behind his head, his eyes locked on the boots of the cop standing over him with an AR-15 assault rifle. I'm gonna allow the term assault rifle because assault is a tactic, not a type of firearm. So
in this case, it actually was.
Yeah, this is being used as an assault rifle. Are there kids? The officers were yelling. Where are the kids? And I'm laying there staring at this guy's boots, fearing for my kids' lives, trying to tell them where my children are. Hart recalled later in a deposition on July 9th, 2015. They're sending these guys with their guns drawn, running upstairs to bust into my children's house, bedroom, wake them out of bed. Hart's wife, Addie, bolted downstairs with the children. The Hart's son put his hands up when he saw the guns. The family of 4 were eventually placed on a couch as police continued to search the property. The officers would only say they were searching for narcotics. I understand a service that they provide is able to do these raids in both German and English. Eddie had a thought. It's because of the hydroponic garden, she told her husband. They're looking for pot. No way, Hart said, correctly reasoning marijuana wasn't a narcotic. And all this for pot? But after 2 hours of fruitless search, the officers showed the Harts a warrant. Indeed, the hunt for marijuana. Eddie and Bob were flabbergasted. All this for pot? You take the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all the rights you expect to have when they come in like that. The only right you have is not to get shot if you cooperate, Hart told the Washington Post this week. They open that door, your life is on the line. Wow. Sometimes
if you cooperate.
Yeah, and this guy's probably an average run-of-the-mill voter who probably at one time said, you know what, if they have to frame that bad guy because he got away with something else, and they have to frame him this time, you know, like the people that defend the Baltimore police would do, he could have been that guy, and now the shoe's on the other foot. But anyway, fortunately he wasn't framed. The April 20th, 2012 raid would not furnish JCSO with the desired arrests and publicity. A news conference had already been planned for the afternoon, but it would cause considerable embarrassment. Not only were the Harts upstanding citizens with clean records, they were also both former Central Intelligence Agency officers. Maybe there were drugs involved. And they were not weed growers. Rather, the quick trigger suspicion of law enforcement had snagged on, it would later turn out, tea leaves and a struggling tomato plant. The Harts would eventually file a federal lawsuit against the county, city, and officers involved. And although a federal judge later threw out their claim, this week a three-judge panel on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Tenth Circuit ruled that the family could move forward in court. The decision has larger implications for Fourth Amendment litigation and legislation targeting badly behaving police officers. The scorching judicial pronouncement blasted authorities for laziness and possible fabrication, the kind of overzealous police work that's become a sometimes deadly facet of the drug war. And despite the sustained effort of the Obama administration to power down the law enforcement's more quixotic battles with illicit substances, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has promised to reprioritize marijuana investigations. The Harts case is a textbook reminder how that can be dangerous.
In more ways than one.
Yes, we'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of seeing peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Freedom Fiends, and we are talking about a family in Kansas that the sheriff's department raided their house to find marijuana, and they found tea leaves in a suffering tomato plant, and it is really a mess. One of the quotes here from the family: "Our family will never be the same," Addie told the Post. "If this can happen to us, everybody in this country needs to be afraid," Bob added.
Yeah.
The events leading to the raid began a year earlier, according to court documents. Starting in 1997, Sergeant James Wingo of the Missouri State Highway Patrol started pulling surveillance shifts in the parking lots of hydroponic garden stores around the state. The project's logic, as Wingo explained it in a 2011 letter to other law enforcement agencies, was that the stores sell items that are consistently found in indoor marijuana growing operations. As customers came and went, Wingo would note their license plate information and enter names into a database. Huh. Wow. Wow, that's kind of East German. Way to go.
Yeah.
Arschloch. In 2011, Wingo conceived of Operation Constant Gardener. In his letter to law enforcement, Wingo stated he would supply your agency with the names of these customers that are within your jurisdiction. This will give your agency 2 weeks to initiate brief investigation to obtain probable cause for a search warrant. Then, per Wingo's plan, the various agencies would all strike on the same day, April 20th. Wingo chose the timing due to the date's association with weed life. It was a date celebrated in that community much as we celebrate Christmas. Wingo promised the operation would be a significant media event. So not only did he want to be an Ashlok, he also wanted to be a Richard, too. Okay. The first series of Operation Constant Gardener raids were successful, with 30 agencies participating in the roundups. 52 indoor grows were seized, according to court records. The media coverage was 99% positive, Wingo noted in an email to the agencies. There was demand for a repeat in 2012. Thomas Redden, a sergeant with the Johnson County Sheriff's Office, emailed Wingo 5 months after the first raids, asking for more joint operations on the upcoming April date. Wingo admitted in an email that he didn't have enough new contacts to justify a full throttle, full 420 operation, but the state highway patrolman offered to share the names he did have with the county. On March 20th, 2012, JCSO received the names from the garden store surveillance. Bob Hart was among them. He had met his wife Addie in 1989 when both were working for the CIA. 10 years later, the family relocated to the Kansas City area to raise a family. Addie worked as an attorney with a local financial group. Bob stayed home and raised the kids. Around 2011, he came up with the idea of trying to raise tomatoes, golden melons, butternut squash, and other vegetables in a hydroponic garden in the family's basement as an educational project with his son. The setup was small, just two parallel tubes of PVC piping with plastic cups of seeds and dirt under the lamps. And to gather supplies for the project, on August 9th, 2011, Bob and his two children piled out of the family's Kia minivan in the parking lot of a gardening store called Green Circle in downtown Kansas City. Wingo was watching from a parked car and noted the license plate. 8 months later, as law enforcement continued to search every inch of their house for drugs, Addie sat on the couch trying to explain to her son what was going on. I had nothing. How do you explain that? They know I can't protect them then, she told the Post this week. Sitting in your home having your Miranda rights read to you, it's absolutely surreal. The raid turned up no marijuana. But before leaving the house, police would always say the family had been targeted and surveilled because marijuana seeds and stems had been found on the property. Really? That sounds
allegedly. You know what,
that sounds like a Baltimore police investigation claim. But anyway, the cops also suggested the couple's son was smoking pot and told the Harts to take him to a pediatrician for a drug test. In the year following the raid, Addie and Bob both struggled to come up with an explanation for why marijuana seeds and stems would have been at their home. The couple say they've never smoked pot themselves. There just wasn't a sensible reason for the raid. The unanswered question began to eat, particularly Bob, previously calm and carefree. He stopped sleeping and found himself mentally tripping down a rabbit hole of possible scenarios. Who were they dealing with here, he wondered. Was this a situation of corrupt cops or a setup? Or did a neighborhood kid drop some marijuana on their lawn walking by? Addie, whose brother was a former New York City police officer, watched as her children became frightened just driving by the police station or seeing a patrol car on the road. That's probably the logical reaction. Finally, nearing a year after the incident, JCSO provides some documentation to the couple. Right away, they understood what had happened. On the official paperwork before the raid, investigators noted they had pulled the couple's trash before the incident as part of the investigation. But the reports didn't refer to stems and seeds. They referred to wet glob vegetation. As soon as we heard that, we knew it was my tea, Addie told the Post, referring to a loose-leaf Teavana brand tea she drank regularly. But it took over a year and $2,500 for a lawyer to figure out what had happened. In fact, the pre-raid investigation was actually even more suspect. Ooh, this is Baltimore. Court records later indicated that after identifying the hearts from Wingo's tip, JCSO conducted three trash pulls on the house. On the first, April 3rd, the officers noted wet plant material, but determined it was innocent. At the next two trash pulls, April 10th and April 17th, the same material was found again, but this time JCSO officers tested the material with a marijuana field test. The results came back positive, but the officers didn't take photos of the results or send the material to a laboratory for confirmation. Huh, wow. Okay, yeah, that is really suspect.
Yeah, they didn't take photos of the lab results or the field results, and then they didn't send it to the lab.
Right. In November 2013, the couple filed a federal lawsuit against the county's Board of Commissioners as well as the officers involved. The family claimed the raid was an unlawful search and seizure in violation of the 14th and 4th Amendments. The suit, which asked for $7 million in damages, also argued law enforcement violated state laws, including trespassing and abuse of power. In December 2015, U.S. District Judge John W. Lungstrom threw out the family's case, citing qualified immunity, the legal doctrine that shields officers from liability for otherwise lawful acts in the course of their duty. The Hearts appealed. You know, here's what I'm getting from this. I don't want to just read the whole darn article here. It sounds like they went on. You got this guy Wingo from the Stasi, and he goes on a fishing expedition. Hmm. He's recording everybody that goes to a garden shop because if he's not chasing down a plant, he's probably blowing leaves or washing dishes in some menial job where he probably belongs and will probably be less of a menace to society. So anyway, he's writing all this stuff down, and because people are going to a garden shop,
right?
They're passing the names out, and they're supposed to be doing their due diligence. They're supposed to be going out and doing an actual investigation to make sure that people don't have a prohibited plant, which is just absolutely asinine on its own, that a plant is prohibited, and that all this money, all this manpower, all this violence is going to be expended on a plant that's not poison ivy. But you know what? I'm glad that poison ivy is not illegal, because then it'll be everywhere and it'll probably have a cash value, because these cops are just absolute idiots and it'll proliferate because of prohibition. So anyway, these lazy Stasi cops, these scumbags that they are, rather than do an actual investigation for something stupid, they just go and they pencil whip it. They're like, hey, you know what? Let's just say that we tested it. No, don't send it to the lab for results. Oh, no, we can't have anything to support the evidence of our test. No, we'll just kick in their door and assume that we're going to find something there. And if not, well, we'll just rely on qualified immunity, because shiny badges actually do grant special rights, because the politicians, the ones that the cops work for, the same politicians that the cops are hired muscle for, their goons for, are going to protect their people. They're going to let them go out there and do whatever they can get away with, and they will protect them. Yeah, every once in a while you'll have the sacrificial lamb to where you just can't get past what happened. You know, the Baltimore case is a prime example of that. That's not justice being served when this guy gets suspended, and if he gets charged. No, that's not justice. That's not cleaning house. That's selective enforcement. That's a sacrificial lamb. That's an attempt to make it look like the cops are not as big of criminals as the people that they're allegedly chasing. That's what this case comes down to. And It doesn't matter how many cases you look at. This is such a trend that it's happening on such a regular basis. It's not even shocking anymore. I remember watching police brutality videos for the first time back when YouTube was new, and it takes a lot to shock me now. And when it comes to stuff like this, I still get angry by it, but I'm not shocked. I actually expect this. I expect to hear stories of cops doing scumbag stuff on a daily basis. And unfortunately, I also expect people to defend it, saying, but they protect us. But within blue line. But that person probably drove too fast, so they deserve to get pot planted on them.
Yeah.
And well, all this other nonsense.
Yeah, in this particular story, they were running surveillance outside of a legitimate business, assuming that everyone who was shopping there was guilty until proven innocent. And as we know, that's not supposed to be the case here in this, you know, in this region. Yep. Region with the monopoly on force.
Yeah, I think it was last week or maybe the week before we talked about, there was an article by Tom Mullen where it talks about a solution for the police department is to have them like the, have them be like the fire department, to where they don't go out looking for stuff. They have to have a, they have to get called before they go out there. Now, granted, in a situation like that, they're going to say, oh, we got an anonymous tip, or we got a call that came in, or they'll have people call up and say, hey, there's this is going on over there. And they'll give them an excuse to go out and harass people. But I mean, with this here, there was absolutely no reason to look at these people other than the fact that they went shopping at a garden store. That was their only crime. That was the only indicator that, you know, to proceed with an investigation. And we see what happened here. We'll be back
after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
Last article of the night. This is going to be a little bit of redemption in the third act. I agree with it for the most part. It comes from the National Review, which I'm pretty sure is more of a right-wing leaning website. And this is talking about the cops. And some of the stories that we went into earlier tonight would apply on this. And the title is, It's Time to Deal with the Police Threat to the Second Amendment. Police raid the wrong home. If the innocent homeowner is lawfully armed, he could end up dead. And the first story it talks about takes place in South Haven, Mississippi, where police were going to serve an arrest warrant for aggravated assault on a man named Samuel Perman. But instead, they showed up at the trailer owned by an auto mechanic named Ishmael Lopez. It was nighttime, and according to his wife, Lopez went to the door to investigate a noise. She stayed in bed. What happened next was tragic. According to the police, Lopez opened his door and a pit bull charged out. One officer opened fire on the dog because, no dog left behind. The other officer fired on the man, allegedly holding a gun in the doorway, pointing it at the men approaching his home. As the Washington Post reported on July 26, it was only after the smoke cleared that the officers made their heart-dropping discovery. They were at the wrong home. Lopez died that night, just like Andrew Scott died in his entrance hall, gun in hand when the police pounded on the wrong door late one night. Scott opened it, saw shadowy figures outside, and started to retreat back into his house. Police opened fire, and he died in seconds. Angel Mendez was more fortunate. He only lost his leg when the police barged into his home without a warrant and without announcing themselves. That's one of the infamous no-knock raids. If past precedent holds, it's likely that the officers who killed Ismael Lopez will be treated exactly like the officers in the Scott and Mendez cases. They won't be prosecuted for crimes, and they'll probably even be immune from civil suit, with the court following precedents holding that officers didn't violate Lopez's clearly established constitutional rights when they approached the wrong house. After all, officers have their own rights of self-defense. What exactly are they supposed to do when a gun is pointed at their face? Well, probably not go to a place that a gun's going to be pointed in your face. So, in other words, the law typically allows officers to shoot innocent homeowners who are lawfully exercising their Second Amendment rights, and then provides these same innocent victims with no compensation for the deaths and injuries that result. This is unacceptable, it's unjust, and it undermines the Second Amendment. This is a mainstream website here. We're not talking about fringe stuff or anything like that. We're not talking about a bunch of crazy libertarians either. We're talking about a bunch of fat, normally cop-sucking Republicans. Think where this leaves homeowners who hear strange sounds or who confront pounding on the door. Because when you hear pounding on the door, on the other side of the door, you don't know what it is. You don't know if it's cops. You don't know if it's local thugs. You don't know if it's out-of-town thugs. It's time for the law to accommodate the Second Amendment. It's time for legal doctrine to reflect when the state intrudes in the wrong home or lawlessly or recklessly, even into the right home, that it absolutely bears the cost of its own mistakes. It's time for law enforcement practice to reflect the reality that tens of millions of law-abiding men and women exercise their fundamental constitutional rights to protect themselves and their families. What this means in practice, first, extraordinarily dangerous and kinetic no-knock raids should be used only in the most extreme circumstances, which is how SWAT raids were back when SWAT teams were formed back in the 60s and 70s. It was only for hostage situations and things like that. Not serving warrants for possession of agriculture or running a barbershop without a license.
Yeah.
Second, prosecutors should closely scrutinize every single instance of mistaken identity raids. They're not going to do that. They've had plenty of time to do that. So I never expect somebody to do the right thing when their job depends upon them doing the wrong thing. Third, if and when police do kill or injure innocent homeowners, they should be stripped of qualified immunity. Definitely.
Exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, unfortunately, the problem is if people start shooting back at police, police are going to go in even harder, because heaven forbid they should actually stop kicking in doors. All right, thanks for coming on tonight, guys, and thanks everybody for listening. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms.
Worms.